This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hard-scrabbled veteran journalist Tom Delmonico, who covered the summit in Singapore, will join us. Might still be in Singapore now. I don't know. That's 210. Dara, because we're off tomorrow. Twins ball game. I'm assuming just finished up the series with the Tigers. How about the Cabrera injury last night? Miguel Cabrera swinging and ruptures
bicep,
his
right?
Bicep. Oh, he's such an amazing player. But the last 3 years, he's been hurt a lot. I love this line early in the year. I'm not going to play injured for this team. I'm not going to do that anymore. I think they still owe him like $120 million. I think they'd like the effort. I'm not questioning his injury this time. But the most bizarre sports story, and it's not a sports story at all, it's a relationship story, is this one involving Erik Karlsson, who's a very good player for the Senators, but he just went through hell with his wife. They lost a child. And the wife of Karlsson, and this story broke, what, late yesterday afternoon, has filed an order of protection against a woman, right, who was harassing. Well, it's the girlfriend of one of Erik Karlsson's teammates. Yeah. This was filed a while ago, but just came out. Melinda Karlsson alleges Monica, is it Carrick, posted hundreds of derogatory online messages aimed at her and her husband. Carrick is a longtime partner of Senators forward Mike Hoffman. Karlsson said in the sworn statement, she's uttered these statements wishing my unborn child dead. The Karlsson's first child, a son named Axel, was stillborn in March. She contends that Monica Carrick has posted over 1,000 negative and derogatory statements about me as a professional. The Senators say we're investigating this matter in cooperation with the NHL. Hoffman denied the allegations in a statement to the paper, an email to the agent seeking comment. Was not immediately returned. Protection order requires a person to keep the peace and be on good behavior when that person appears likely to commit a criminal offense. Right? You can't just go to the Hennepin County at him as a practical joke, put a restraining order on me as much as you'd like to. They have to see some significant, tangible proof for this to be there. Among the comments to Sandy Dandy 45, which they contend is this girlfriend. I feel bad for the baby. He didn't have a chance with Melinda popping painkiller medication every day. Again, this isn't just some psychopath who doesn't know someone. This is the girlfriend of Erik Karlsson's teammate. I know the name a little bit. Is Mike Hoffman any good? He's been a player for a while, right? You also had that they had a face-to-face. Erik Karlsson, Mike Hoffman, had a face-to-face parking lot confrontation. How could you not?
So, yeah.
How could you not?
Well, it sounds like, I mean, obviously this is despicable what this girlfriend has been doing.
Yeah.
But there's got to be something more here, right? I mean.
Unless she just has psychotic problems,
yeah.
Right?
And no way of anything would justify those actions, but
no. Yeah, I don't know if she is convinced Lindsay something else happened, if she just is not in any state of mind to know what's going on. How did they find out eventually it was her? What did they try to do before they went to this level? How do they ever play together?
Oh, man, I don't know. The New York Post article that I'm reading on it says that Julie Turris, who's the wife of former Senators forward Kyle Turris, defended the woman being harassed. Melanie, is that right?
Yeah.
So many different women.
Monica Carrick.
No, she just, this woman's defending Melinda Carlson, woman who's being
yes. Yeah.
It says, this crossed the line from cyberbullying to something entirely different in April. Sounds like it was a private matter. No one wanted to be public. And then another wife jumped in to defend Melinda and said, Melinda was so nice she wanted to keep it private, but it's gotten so bad she had to come forward.
Yeah, I would think when you get to the point when you're making comments, I feel bad for the baby. He didn't have a chance with Melinda popping painkiller medication every day. I mean, are we going to get to the point where it's almost Brian Colangelo-like when it was, okay, did Brian know about this or was it on the wife? Can Hoffman play on this team if somehow he's going to say, she's crazy. I had no idea. I had no part of this. Is there any way that you think Carlson, who's...
If I'm running the Ottawa Senators, I'm saying goodbye to Mr. Hoffman.
Yeah. What an amazing story this is. All right, 2:08. Weather and traffic come up. Not in that order. I just decided to throw you off. It'll obviously be traffic and weather. News right now. And then Tom Delmonico, who reported from Singapore on what he witnessed. It's a big break for us that a journalist who's joined us many times, sometimes in controversial
beloved fashion. Listeners love him.
Well, sometimes he's famous, sometimes he's infamous, sometimes there's two of them. We think only one today. In fact, I only can take one today. I do not want to hear from two Tom Delmonico's, but Tom Delmonico covered the summit. He is a freelance journalist. He has worked for many powerful media outlets over his career, and Tom joins us right now. Tom, thank you so much. I can only imagine how busy your schedule is post-summit. First of all, can I ask you this? Are you still in Singapore right now?
You have to excuse me a second, Chad. I'm getting a call here.
Yes,
it's always something.
Tom.
And I wanted to wait. Thank you. I didn't want to address you until that call beeped through. I wasn't going to take it, of course, that they called at the moment we were online. And so, yes, still in Singapore, waiting for my flight to depart. And it was quite a magnificent sight here, quite the paradise, if you will. And a lot of things have happened. So thank you for having me.
So as a veteran journalist who's, I mean, you've joined us from the Olympics, you've joined us from the X Games, you've joined us from political events. I'm assuming you've traveled to Singapore before. Is that correct?
I've never been to this part of the continent, no. But I can tell you, though, I have intermingled with many of the Asian people that are here on this contingency. And so it does feel like home.
What stood out most with the summit that impressed you, Tom?
I would have to say, Chad, that the mere presence of our president and the things that happened here was very intimidating to the Korean leaders. And I think that should be noticed and remarked about the most as a takeaway, that we came as a country here with big, big power.
You okay?
And I'm getting
choked up,
dry here. I've been sitting here waiting for this standby flight to take off, and I don't have water. The intimidation factor of our president really is going to be a big takeaway.
A man of your stature is flying standby?
Well, not that tall. What really happened here was last minute organizations that it seemed to fall in my lap. And so I do what I do best, which is report, and I get here how I get here, and I'll get home when I do. But in the meantime, there's a per diem.
Tom, did you get
is Adam, by the way.
Adam Carter here. Did you get close at all to the president and Kim Jong-un? Were you in close proximity?
You had to pick up a little bit of the body language.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, was not. We were as close as CNN shouting questions. That's as close as we got.
What'd you think of that? Jim Acosta's taking a lot of heat for shouting questions. Right. Would you do something like that?
You bet.
Really?
You bet I would. This is the time to do those things. You know, there's no time like the present. Do I agree with his way of thinking? No. But as a way of reporting, absolutely. Get it out there. He's got an agenda, obvious. But to have the opportunity in those close proximities to get the coverage that CNN did, you bet. I mean, that's putting them on the map here for a little bit longer. Keep the network a little bit in life support, if you will.
You've taken multiple cheap shots here at Acosta and CNN. What exactly do you believe is Acosta's agenda?
Oh, you know as well as I, you probably carry some of the same feelings, many people do, that our president is not as good as he should be, and he's a joke. That's really what it is.
Wait, you
that's what you feel?
That's what you feel, or that's what Acosta feels?
Oh, that's what Acosta feels.
Oh, okay.
I don't feel that. I don't like to carry my bias on my shoulders here or on my sleeves, but I got to tell you, our president was terrific. I mean, if I was any closer to smell how wonderful that success is, I probably would have gotten a waft of it because it was definitely palatable.
What does that smell?
In and amongst journalism.
Help me. What does success smell like?
You know what, when you smell it, Chad, I'm sure you've been there yourself. You've been around it plenty, scooping the stories and doing the things with the sports in which you've done. At least my research in you has told me. You know what that smells like. It might be a little bit different from time to time, but you know it when you smell it. And when you see it on the national stage, international, global scale, you sure know when President Trump is doing far more than anybody else has been able to do in a long time. And let me tell you what, just from personal ability, that is success.
Tom Delmonico is with us. It sounds like he's at the airport, Singapore. He covered the summit, and he is reporting. Tom, when we talked to your representative, she was intimating that you might be days, if not weeks, away from a one-on-one interview with the president. Can you share any of those details with us?
You must have read that on Twitter.
Is it true? Are you going to sit down with the president?
Oh, I there is no plans for me.
Oh. Okay.
To do such things. I think it was a Twitter. You're amongst those haters out there, aren't you?
No, I no, mean, I'm just
POTUS, myself. We're all the butt of everybody's joke when it comes down to it. There are a lot of keyboard cowboys with some cowardice talk, and that's probably just what you've read about me. I have no plan.
Well, this took a turn. I was assuming that.
We have you on the show. It's respect. I have been told by your assistant that was going to take place. What is your next assignment?
You know, there's a big deal going on. I don't know if you've heard about it, but Robert De Niro has got some things that are being said, and he's got some plans and to rally a bit. I think he's going for a run for it. And these are the first telltale signs, so we're going to go explore that.
Are you going to interview Robert De Niro?
Well, if the opportunity comes about, you bet I would. But there's smellings around some of the folks who travel in the journalistic areas that I do that this is going to be a big deal. And De Niro and Trump, this isn't the end of it, so we're going to get on the front end.
What would you ask Robert De Niro?
If he's running for any position, elected position, because I think I could get it out of him that he is. I think that's the plan here. He's going to use Hollywood to make this his movie debut, The American Leader. I mean, it's a great storyline, and I think he could do it. I think he could do it. Don't you?
No, I don't.
You don't think Robert De Niro could run and win the presidency of the United States of America?
No.
Well, interesting. Interesting. Well, this shall unfold, and I shall be at the front end. And if it does come up with something, boy, well, I'll be sure to share. And I would love to do it if I interview him.
We'd love to talk to you after.
Yeah. How's the food in Singapore?
Oh yeah, very good question.
Horrible, horrible. I mean, you can't eat regular American food. It's all served.
I mean, Tom. I mean, Tom, you shouldn't just expect to travel the world as you have, and there's going to be cheeseburgers all over the place.
A man can wish. A man can wish.
Tom, I think that's an appropriate way to end the conversation. I hope you get on the flight, enjoy a cocktail, and especially on that De Niro interview. It takes place. We'd love to talk to you. Oh, he hung up? Wow, we lost the connection to Singapore. That laugh.
I can't tell if it's
sinister.
Maniacal.
I'm a little worried. Maybe some reaction to Tom Delmonico, 81807, back in moments. It's sad that in this day and age, I'm reading texts here on Tom Delmonico that I have to give the benefit of the doubt of these bizarre, twisted people and opinions when I hear them. I just switched over from a conservative station, so my grip on reality is still a bit shaky. Somebody wants to know if this Delmonico previously was the mouthpiece for the police union in Minneapolis. Nope. That's John Delmonico.
John Delmonico.
Yeah,
yep.
That's not Tom. They could be related. I've Adam, do we have any idea? Because you first struck up the relationship.
I think Tom is from Chicago, so I don't think he has any connection to the Twin Cities other than of course, our show.
Yeah. Somebody says it reminds me of the Count on Sesame Street. He does have a little bit of the Count on Sesame Street laugh. We need to use that on the show. It's unique to say the least. I think we are discussing this. Let's see. The conservatives expect to be the good sports. Obama skit. Your phone lines would likely burn down. I have no idea what the person's talking about. It's crazy if he thinks De Niro would win a presidency. Well, I don't, but Tom does. And Adam, it sounds like he plans on pursuing Robert De Niro.
Good luck to him.
Yeah. All I can say is I'm uncomfortable after listening to that interview with Tom.
That's what good journalists do. They make people uncomfortable.
Yeah, and I was uncomfortable. Pretty funny. Called you out as a liberal. Yeah, I mean, some of the people.
Afflict the comfortable, comfort the afflicted.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. Let's talk about Lindsay's people. Bring Dara into the conversation, this one. 53% of millennials expect to become millionaires one day. 53%. Lindsay, are you in the 53% or the 47%?
I'm definitely in the 47%, but you know what I'm going to blame on this? It's not the millennials' fault. It's the people who raised us. It's their fault because we were the generation that could do whatever we wanted.
Oh,
we were the generation that...
You're going to end up in front of a judge. You're going to be like, it's not my fault I murdered that guy. It's my mom's fault. She said I could do anything. No.
Nailed it right there.
But it's true. It is true. From the time we stepped foot into school, it's the time we stepped foot in school, we were told, you can be anything you want to be. It's the Amy Schumer opening on SNL.
Yeah,
girls, you can do whatever you want except for that.
Yeah. 7% predict this will happen by the time they're 30, 19% by the age of 40, and 16% by the age of 50. 70% of male millennials say they expect to become millionaires. 38% of females expect to become.
So what percent of men?
70%.
70%
of millennial males think they're going to become a millionaire?
I'm not surprised by that.
So you look at 10 guys and 7 of them think they're going to be millionaires
millionaires.
Well, that, my friend,
you know
is why
that?
We don't have a just tax policy in this country.
Make America great
again.
No,
I just figured out my new career path.
Millennial?
Quit and I'm going to become the next Tony Robbins, sell my VHS and cassette tapes to
well,
these millennials.
Well, they're ready and waiting, right? They're
yeah,
just ready
I'll
to
I'll tell
be-
them how to make $1 million.
I'll tell you another scam, too, and we saw plenty of it the last few days. The body language police. The number of goofballs who are totally making it up. Look at how Donald Trump's hand is. Oh, you see that from Kim Jong-un? Okay, we all get one, like, some body language items. But some things, Dara, it's just that's their nervous tick. That's how they move their hands. That's how they were sitting in the moment, as opposed to, that means this symbolic. You can't disprove
yeah,
it.
It's just,
amazing.
It's just that airtime filling. That drives me crazy when they do that. And after sports games, when they just ask people, you know, just to talk to fill air. And it's like, you just say dumb things if you don't really have something to say.
Most locker rooms and clubhouses are filled with that. Because I'll give you one of the most overrated things in sports radio, meaningless two-minute player interviews.
I came to win. I won.
They
say, one day at a time.
They, I mean, 80% of them say nothing. And 20% of them are really good. But now with social media, Adam, they're more inclined just to say it on their own, or then they're worried about saying it and they'll get vilified. Player interviews, overrated. By the way, during that conversation, we had another 140,000 millennials become millionaires. That's how good the country's going right now. It was late last week when the news came to all of us in different ways. Anthony Bourdain had taken his life, 61. Remarkable life, troubled life, a full life, a life dealing with drugs, a life as a world-class chef, an amazing storyteller, willing to go anywhere, fearless, willing to talk about his flaws, seemingly full of life, seemingly at the peak of his career, but as we say all the time, depression doesn't discriminate among successful people and what is really going on with people's hearts and, more importantly, their body makeup and their mind. We really don't know. This is someone you've known for a long time. I was off last week, but I heard your very heartfelt and emotional comments to Dave within, 30 minutes or so when you just had found out. When you're days after it and you're still trying to wrap your arms around what happened, how do you feel differently now compared to in the immediacy of the news?
Well, you know, in the immediacy of it, I went into just full, I think I went through every stage. I went through full denial first. My first thought when I read it was, you know, these terrible people of the internet have pulled a terrible hoax, and this is not possible.
Because this happens a lot, sadly.
Yeah, and, you know, I went from, you know, denial into shock. You know, it's rough. He's touched so many lives. Everywhere I go now, I mean, there's just been an outpouring. So many chefs, so many just people that work in restaurants, sort of distinguished chefs, people that are leading the restaurant, and then cooks, you know, the people that are just in there,
right.
Servers. I mean, it's a really, this is more than a body blow. I mean, it's not, you know, my friend and I have guilt feelings. You know, all this stuff came out on Twitter that day. I was like, reach out to your friends, even the ones that seem fine. It's like, really? Like, yeah. What am I going to do? Like, would I be, you know, but the last person I would have reached out to ask if he was okay. Look spectacular. Wonderful Italian girlfriend and, you know, having this new life. And
professionally, as successful as seemingly he ever has been
on top and rising, you know.
Yeah.
He had this great book imprint. I knew all these people that, you know, were working with him. I mean, there was no reason for you to think. And you know, all these people that are working in restaurants, chefs, owners, just people in this community, you know, you think about like who you want to be when you succeed. You want to be Anthony Bourdain. Like,
yeah.
That's what you want to be. You want to be, you know, vivacious. And the cliche about him was the cliche about Elvis, right? It was men want to be him and women want to be with him.
Yeah.
Say. You know, mm-hmm. and it was.
I said that cliche. I said the verbatim the other day.
Yeah.
I said the cliche right now fit him more than anybody, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I have been in this business for a while, and of course, you know, nowhere near as successful as he is, and I wouldn't compare myself, but I do have, you know, some of that persona stuff that you kind of have in the modern era. You know, you know me better than the public does, and you've seen me kind of swallow some personal stuff
yep.
over the years.
Right.
And, you know, you keep the bad stuff private and you go out smiling and you do, you know, everything you got to do to be on stage and be out there. And you know, so everybody's just processing this. You know, I'm processing it as like, it's a body blow to a lot of people around me. It's making me kind of reevaluate, you know, how much of my persona that has gotten me so far has been so fun to be Champagne Barbie and talk about all this stuff. How much of that obscures my real humanity and doesn't allow me to connect with people to some way. So there's all kinds of stuff churning around. I don't, you know, I lost one of my best friends to cancer a bunch of years ago. And that was a first friend that I really lost. And it, you know, I kind of came through that experience, and it's going to sound naive and dumb, but it was one of those things where you're like, oh, I'm never going to be all the way put back together. Like these, mm-hmm. there are blows that you
right.
take and you don't, you don't get up, you don't
nope.
come back together. And I think this is going to be one of them.
Yeah. And you look at how this story reached so many different people. Right. And I had enormous respect for him. I spent a lot of the weekend watching parts of, you know, pun intended, parts of unknown, and a lot of CNN commentators, a lot of interviews consuming it. And then you read some of the news part on the suicide stuff, which is, there's so many layers to it. And we spent a lot of time talking about it over the years. But when you have an event like this, and when it was tied so closely to Kate Spade, you do see the numbers go up of people who are calling suicide hotlines. But also I saw good reporting saying that sadly, that the data shows when famous individuals take their life, that the suicide rates actually go up.
Yeah.
That when Robin Williams took his life, in many areas, it went up 10%. So it's both. More people are reaching out, and more people are feeling something, which allows them to go to that level, whatever it is, to end their life.
I'm not going to come up with an easy answer to this, but it's, what are you going to say? Like, a lot of heroes of our culture have committed suicide. You know, mm-hmm. if you're vulnerable and you look at the world and you say, oh, look, it's Kurt Cobain, it's Robin Williams, it's, you know, Anthony Bourdain, Kate Spade. You know, these, we tell ourselves a lot in this culture that there's, you know, a little bit more money I'm going to get and things are going to be okay. A little bit more success. Like,
yeah.
my partner's going to be a little more attractive. Like, you know, there's some over the rainbow
right.
place where you reach happiness.
Fantasy land where it's just serene, perfect, and these other things
that
are gnawing at you will go away.
Yeah, and you look at Kate Spade, you know, she got $500 million in her bank account. She's spunky and adorable and 35-year marriage. And, you know, so that's not good enough, you know. And I think it's you know, how do we talk about you have to, the feeling of happiness is different than success, you know. So that maybe that's what we need to talk about.
Yep.
That feeling of happiness, that feeling of sadness inside of you. Those things are not attached to money and success and achievement. And that's not what we like. That's not what we're doing here. And I feel like we could connect more. You know, I've known people whose kids have had suicide attempts, and you know, that's the roughest thing in the world. You know, how do you reach out to those kids and tell them, like, so much of what we're telling you as society to, you know, earn more and be stronger and all these things, that's actually not important. What's important is feeling love, having connection, taking care of yourself, admitting when things are tough. You know, where do we do with that?
Well, on this show, we certainly talked about it many, many times at great depth, just to all of us on the show and with guests, and we'll continue to do it. But I want to get your thoughts. There's no transition that's easy. So let's just pause. We'll get to some more of the typical conversations that we have about food, but I wanted to get a little more days after because I know he meant a lot to you. He meant a lot to a lot of people, and a lot of people are still trying to process all this and what it meant for him, what it meant to others, and what it means to people close to them. So it's 49 past 2. Back with Dare. Joy Behar hospitalized in an avocado accident. I know a lot of conservatives are probably very excited about that, but explain.
We have talked about this on this
show.
We have,
a number of times.
Everybody, I want you to use spoons only to get the pit out of the avocado. Things just seem to go horribly wrong. Joy Behar, I'm sorry for your pain. You've lived long enough on this planet to own a spoon.
I got a feeling she owns one. It was very poor judgment. We're trying to get to another number of items here. A supermarket accidentally sold swastika-shaped bread.
Hilarious. All right. So this
how does this happen?
This supermarket has a bakery section. Every month they do a special bread. Somebody in there had the good idea of making windmill-shaped bread. So you know what a windmill looks like. Although somewhere between having this idea and getting them onto the shelf, I think they put the bread into square pans. They ended up with thousands and thousands of swastikas just in little bread bags. What would you do if you were the baker and you had this?
Throw them away.
You started your day. You're going to make a windmill. End of your day, you got 6,000 swastikas.
unless you some are known as the really snarky place that is going to poke fun at everything. Oh. And I mean everything if you're poking fun at the swastika. If not, garbage, write it off. All right, another vegan restaurant.
I don't want to curse these places. I don't think this is going to work. So right next to beloved institution, it's Greek to me,
yep.
This very cursed
good
little
place.
Restaurant spot that has used to have this gray house, and then it had a pasta place, then it had an Indian place. Apparently, the Indian place is closed. Now a vegan one is going in. And I think the main problem is that the food is not that healthy. Like, the vegans seem to think that if you take meat out of food, you've now got healthy food. It doesn't work that way at all. Meat is, quite healthy. And a lot of just meat substitutes, deep fried in oil, I don't know. I don't think there's a big enough constituency. We'll see.
The Big Sour Beer Festival.
Oh, this is going to be good. This is on Saturday.
Okay.
Mixed Culture is what it's called. And, same way bread tastes one way and then sourdough tastes another. These sour beers are just booming. Everybody's into them. I'm into them.
You like Fair State.
Yeah, they're not all sour. I will say, some of them don't taste sour at all. And this is how they've made beer in Belgium for hundreds of years. But, so Fair State Brewery, they're bringing in brewers from around the country, all these very rare beers. It's super cool. I will be there.
Going back to our conversation with Anthony Bourdain, tell folks about who you're having on your show Saturday at 11 a.m.
I've got Sue Moores. Kowalski's is leading a discussion and different programs about mental health, and seems like the right time to do this. So we're going to have Sue in. We're going to talk about all the things you can do
Absolutely.
For wellness. I mean, we need to just stop pushing ourselves all the time.
Well stated. Thank you, Dara.
Thank you.
2:57, that is our Lindus Construction Time Check. Time to learn why Lindus is a top installer of GAF. Asphalt shingles in the upper Midwest. We're not on tomorrow because the Twins are playing. And then Friday, I'm out. Adam's out because we're playing in his golf tournament. I hope you're hosting the show. Do we know who's hosting the show Friday? We don't know. Maybe it's Lindsay. Enjoy the rest of the afternoon, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.